Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.
Going on with one of my family members. My father's in dire straits. He's an octogenarian, very old, and got some cold about a week ago, fell, cracked his head. Not doing well. I haven't been to my own house in over a week. I'm staying elsewhere. And I'm basically playing nursing home orderly right now, 24/7, 365 for my own dad. So it's pretty rough going. You know, all those things that nursing home staff do for the residents, I'm doing for my own parent. And, you know, it's pretty crazy. So I got a couple clips that I'm going to do for the broadcast, because I don't have any of my equipment. I haven't had time to prepare a show. So what the best thing I can do, I'm going to play a broadcast from Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, Blackbird 9, and Golden Pipe Wrench from around July. And for the first, you know, 50-some-odd minutes. And I've had this one in my vault. I had to get it sent back over to me from Andrew today. But this had to do with Henry Ford series, The International Jew, and this is part 11. And I remember listening to it, and it was so excellent that I said, well, sometime when I can't do my broadcast, I'm going to play this one. And then following that, I'm going to play an old classic still floating around on YouTube and BitChute, The Jesuits' Priesthood of Absolute Evil Exposed. This one's from the Nicholson 1968 YouTube channel. So following the ACH episode from July, you'll hear this, and there's a lot of excellent information and quotes in that one. I apologize. I was I couldn't do the show last week due to the fact that this was a week ago that my dad fell, cracked his head open, all that good stuff, went to the ER, and I've been dealing with this for ever since last Sunday, and so now this Sunday, really put some things in perspective about everything we're watching unfold. You know, we talked about the dark winter scenario and whether this was going to be a dark winter. It seems to be unfolding at a pretty rapid pace. A lot of sports people dying, especially the footballers in Europe. Celebrities, Sidney Poitier, Betty White, Dirty Harry Reid, quite a few people, John Madden, Bob Saget from the infamous kind of rumors about him and Hollywood and the Olsen twins just died. So very, very fascinating watching this unfold. The Pew people, X-22 and the Hopium dealers are still saying, oh, Trump's social's coming online and everything's going to happen any day now, and the indictments and blah, 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 blah. And so that's getting rather stale. We are seeing some pedophile activity, the CNN people being taken down, Ghislaine Maxwell conviction and so forth. But a lot happening, a lot of obituaries, a lot of people dying early. So we'll have to see how this unfolds. But I have a lot of notes built up over the last couple weeks, and hopefully things straighten out with my dad. So say a prayer if you would. With no further ado, Mr. Producer, go ahead and play the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock show from July with Blackbird Dine and the Golden Pipe Wrench. Very, very excellent content in this broadcast. And then we'll finish it up with whatever's left with the YouTube video I sent. Hopefully I can do a broadcast next week, folks. This is all touch and go for me right now. It could go either way with my dad. He's trying to give up. He's not. He doesn't want to eat. Doesn't want to drink much. I can barely get supplements and all that stuff down his throat. So very, very tough set of circumstances here. So put the word out, and hopefully things turn around for him, but we'll see. Mr. Producer, appreciate you doing this for me, and listeners, stay tuned. I think it's worth a listen. Go ahead, Mr. Producer. Thanks a lot. Yeah, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
For Lard rules over you simplified now to you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host, and today I'm delighted to welcome back my good friends Blackbird Nine and Golden Pipe Wrench to continue our series on Henry Ford's four-volume set, The International Jew. This is going to be part 11, so let's bring them both up right now. Blackbird, are you with me?
Greetings, good sir. Thank you for having us back on.
Great to have you back on. And Golden, are you with me?
Yes, I am, sir. It's wonderful to be back, and we're all ready to go.
Yeah, and folks, we've been having a great chat off the air, so I hope that this is going to be as entertaining on the air as we continue with these articles from Henry Ford. Now, the first one that I've got here, I've got quite a lot written about it. I've got over a page in the Synagogue of Satan. It's called Rule of the Jewish Kahilla Grips New York, and it's the Dearborn Independent issue of February the 26th, 1921. And the extracts that I've got are as follows. The Kahilla of New York is of importance to Americans everywhere because of two facts. It not only offers a real and complete instance of a government within a government in the midst of America's largest city, but it also constitutes through its executive committee, through which pro-Jewish and anti-Gentile propaganda is operated, and Jewish pressure brought to bear against certain American ideas. That is to say, the Jewish government of New York constitutes the essential part of the Jewish government of the United States. The word Kahilla has the same meaning as Kahul, which signifies community, assembly, or government. It represents the Jewish form of government in the dispersion. That is to say, since destiny has made the Jews wanderers of the earth, they have organized their own government so that it might function regardless of the governments which the so-called Gentiles have set up. The New York Kahilla is the largest and most powerful union of Jews in the world. The center of Jewish world power has been transferred to that city. That is the meaning of the heavy migration of Jews all over the world toward New York. It is to them what Rome is to the devout Catholic, and what Mecca is to the Mohammedan. The Kahilla is an alliance, more offensive than defensive, against the Gentiles. The majority of the membership of the New York Kahilla is of an extremely radical character. Those seething hundreds of thousands who carefully organized on the East Side the government which was to take over the Russian Empire, even choosing in the Jewish quarter of New York the Jew who was to succeed the Tsar, and yet, in spite of this character of membership, it is officered by Jews whose names stand high in government, judiciary, the law, and banking. The city of New York is divided into 18 Kahilla districts, which comprise a total of 100 Kahilla neighborhoods, in accordance with the population. The Kahilla district boards administer Kahilla affairs in their respective districts in accordance with the policy and rules laid down by the central governing body. Practically every Jew in New York belongs to one or more lodges, secret societies, unions, orders, committees, or federations. The list is a prodigious one. The purposes interlace and the methods dovetail in such a manner as to bring every phase of New York life not only under the watchful eye, but under the swift and powerful action of experienced compulsion upon public affairs. So fairly lengthy segment there. BB, what can you tell us about this article? Over to you.
This, to me, is when Henry Ford is really using that engineer system analysis mind to go in and reverse engineer modern Judaism and to see, you know, how is this system structured? You know, and how does it differ from the game rules that everyone else is trying to play by? The American laws, British laws. And so this is one of the things I always stress, is that not everyone is playing by the same game rules that you are playing by. And this is what's really hard to get your head around, that we kind of, as Western Europeans, we have this idea of, well, we're all basically playing by the same rules of civilization. We have our rules on, you know, behaviors that are acceptable and unacceptable. And we have our idea of goodness and our idea of evil. And you try to be a good person and you try to make things work, and et cetera, et cetera. And when Henry Ford was writing this, he's seeing just how ruthless this system is, because, you know, while this is going on, you're seeing despite the best efforts of the early Mockingbird Jewish media to suppress information coming out of the new Soviet Union. But yeah, he is getting information about what is going on with the Red Terror, with the Holodomor, with the Armenian genocide, you know, with the Young Turks, with the Dome, all these things. And that, you know, these, you know, groups, these zealots are just going out and mass murdering people, and they're being orchestrated and financed and trained in America and in, you know, England and in France, etc., and then shipped over to, you know, carry out these Marxist roles. And so here we see this idea of a nation within a nation. And this is one of the things that when you look at the history, especially of the diaspora, of, you know, the one of the main problems with Jews is they always refuse to assimilate into the culture. They always, you know, try to stay a nation within their host nations, but at the same time, they have this master mindset, this intransigent master mindset, that the world is theirs, it was given to them by God, and they are here to rule the planet, and not only rule the planet, but to fix it. And this is the big thing about Tikkun Olam, you know, fixing the world. This is the battle cry that came out of the diaspora. So you started seeing this term Tikkun Olam begin around the beginning of the Piscean Age, you know, 0 AD. So around 10 to 220 is when this diaspora rabbi movement of, we've lost our priest, we've lost our temples, how should we organize ourselves so we can remain a people? And so what you see here with Henry Ford is he's actually mapping out how the Jews move into an area and then section it off into their turf and their spheres of influence, and that they are waging war to gain complete control of full spectrum attributes of that entire culture. And, you know, one of the things I love about this thing is he says that the Kahila is an alliance more offensive than defensive. And so you have this group that is looking after Jewish interest and sees Gentiles as either Shabbat Goy that are useful idiots or uppity Amalek that have to be neutralized, you know, that kill the best of the Gentiles. You know, so any natural leaders that are going to rise up against them, they have to be destroyed. And so you just see this mindset of a community, a Jewish community organized for the administration, that we say, of charities and communal work, right? The assembly of the community. But basically what you're looking at is a hidden hand government, a nation within a government, that is looking at the world as their territory, their turf, and they are trying to get control, not unlike the Jewish gang bosses of the, you know, 1930s through the 1960s, you know, Murder Incorporated with Meyer Lansky, the Purple Gang, the Stern Gang, the Ergen. You know, these were all organized crime groups that were working as a unit for Jewish interests. And so this idea of morality is just, you know, Western civilization morality versus this, you know, Jewish morality, it was completely different. And this is what people like Henry Ford were, you know, really discovering here in their modeling. And, you know, so when you look at things like the beginning of the United Nations or the League of Nations and then the United Nations, you know, that globe is mapped out into those territories. And then the Federal Reserve coming along in 1913, you know, they basically divided the nation of the Republic of the United States up into Federal Reserve territories, and those became under Jewish control by these bankers that decided which industries were going to you know, exist in those areas and which ones they were going to run out of business. And so to me, this is, you know, very important. And, you know, one of the things about the Tikkun Olam mindset is the idea that Jews bear responsibility not only for their own moral, spiritual, and material welfare, but also for the welfare of society at large. For many contemporary pluralistic rabbis, the term refers to Jewish social justice or the establishment of, quote, godly qualities throughout the world. That sounds good, but basically what they're saying is we want to impose our law worldwide, our 613 mitzvahs for Jews and the seven Noahide laws for non-Jews. And that's going to be the New World Order, and it's going to be this age of peace and prosperity. Of course, it's also going to be the age of white genocide and the end of Christianity. And that's what Henry Ford was trying to warn about. It's like, you know, you've got this nation within a nation that has a completely different set of game rules and a completely different end game than the founding fathers had with the Constitutional Republic. So back to you.
Thank you, BB. That was incredible analysis there. Golden, anything that you'd like to add?
Oh, I don't know what I can add to that. He just literally took all my notes. No, I'll go into this way. I'll come at it from a different way. From what I understand, this chapter is actually pretty good because it explains the actual physical branches of how they operate. And what you have is the kahilas as groups in certain areas advocating for Jewish purpose. It's like a Jewish Sharia. So it only advocates for Jewish things, and it always uses the fact of the stranger as anyone who isn't Jewish as anti-Gentile. It keeps the group solidarity, and it keeps them in a victimhood persecuted mode. So this way they will never, ever really bind with the society itself, but always feel persecuted. It's like a self-feeding way to keep their victimhood. But meanwhile, what they're doing is they're placing it in groups as they get bigger, and they link the groups together to work as a cohesive purpose with direction from the top. So it's almost like a tree going downwards as they go down. And this works into the unions. But the key about this chapter is he explains this about New York City is linked to the American Jewish community. It's hidden, and it's planned solidarity. Like it's linked by a planned victimhood up to other groups, and they work down. This is why you never really get Jews attacking Jews and other groups, because they're linked through solidarity, unless it's fake, like it's a orchestrated drama struggle where they're trying to get to a purpose in itself from the top. And it's actually fascinating because when you understand that, you can understand partially how this whole system is run. And you can see now how they're trying to project onto other groups the victimhood that they used to control the Gentile, because that's how they control the Gentile, through victimhood, through they cry out as they strike you. Meanwhile, they're working for their own purpose. But every time you even turn to defend yourself, they're playing the victim. And that's how pretty well it works. And they literally control organizations, unions, as you step through with Henry Ford, how they walk in with two or three, then build a group. It's all linked to the main kahila, and they all work to support that group. And it grows and grows and grows, and pretty well consumes whatever they're taking over. Back over to you.
It is interesting. In the UK, I mentioned this before, a couple of points. The author Roald Dahl, who's one of our most famous authors, modern authors, of course, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, he's best known for worldwide. He also wrote books for an adult audience. Tales of the Unexpected was how they were aired on television. I think that was popular in the US as well. But apparently about 30 or so years ago, he said a couple of things the Jews didn't like. We found out about that when the Postal Service in the UK was going to issue a set of stamps for him to honour his work because he was such a popular author. I mean, my childhood wouldn't have been the same without reading the books like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Twits, all that. I remember laughing out loud when I was 6-7 years old reading these things. But because he said a couple of things that they don't like, he doesn't get a set of stamps to honour him, even though he's one of the probably most recognised children's authors ever, as well as a very accomplished author of adult fiction. And the other thing that I saw this week that I mentioned on Monday's show, article in the Daily Mail, that the Church of England are going to issue an apology for the fact that Jews were kicked out of the UK in 1290, despite the fact that the Church of England weren't even formed until Henry VIII's time, so they weren't even around then. But they're the people that are coming out to apologise. So more and more you're seeing all these different groups having to sort of run around and pander to this interest. If they've ever felt wronged or offended, they're not happy until, you know, they get all the apologies. They don't allow any praise of people who've ever criticised them. All this sort of thing that we see going on. And it seems to indicate the level of control that they have. Because I would think that, you know, if you put it to a vote about whether Roald Dahl should be honoured with a set of stamps in this country, it would overwhelmingly pass if it was a referendum. Obviously, that wouldn't happen. And the government know that, and the Postal Service know that, which is why they propose doing the stamps. But this group, or elements within it, jump up and say, no, he said something we don't like. Oh, okay, we won't do the stamps then. And that's where we are now. And that's why I think that we're going through what we're going through now, because the control was always going to become more and more overt, and that was why the censorship had to become more and more draconian, because as it became clearer and clearer who was running the show, then obviously they can't risk people like us actually telling the story or reading from Henry Ford, who knew this over 100 years ago. So anyway...
Yeah, it's the same thing, Andrew, as right now they're now calling for censorship on social media, and they're using the ADL. If you think of the ADL, it's another, like I said, it's another Kahila. It's a small unit group that is now taking, they took over all the internet, whoever they didn't buy, and now they're actually now wielding power, and they don't care. But the problem is everybody say they're going to lose money. It's not about money, it's about power, and now it's in your face, and they love hypocrisy, because hypocrisy shows power, and that's a key thing that conservatives have to start realizing. You can point to hypocrisy all you want, and you can say it's about my rights. They're wielding power, and people are starting to ask, are you going to do something, conservatives? And they're asking the politicians, well, are you going to do something? Like Ron Paul, when he says something, well, they're now going to censor. And people are saying, are you going to do something? And he just, nothing. Because then you realize who runs the show, and it's not about your votes. But that's the key about the great thing about all of us. We see it. There has to be a reason why we see it. And don't fall for it. Just keep digging, I guess, as we say. And we'll find more rabbit holes. Now back over to you.
Thank you, Golden. Anything that you'd like to add, BB, before I move on to the next article?
Just getting back to reiterating that not everyone is playing by the same game rules you are. And Western civilization, especially Christian Western civilization, is a forgiveness culture. The idea of you can be redeemed, you can make up for things you have done wrong. And that is not part of the Jewish mindset at all. Judaism is a revenge culture. It is a cancel culture. It is a master-slave system. And one of the things is the slave can never, ever critique or criticize or mock the master. And so I always say the litmus test for any master-slave system is the double standard. And we are seeing the double standards of what Jews are allowed to do. They're allowed to form as many groups for Jewish interests as they want, and no one dare say boo about it. But if you have two white Southern guys going fishing together, that's suddenly a hate group and has to be shut down by the ADL, the SPLC, and the NAACP, and the World Jewish Congress, and you know, the list goes on and on and on. And so it's just this, you know, what we can do and what you can do are two totally different things in the Jewish worldview. So back to you.
Thank you, BB. Yes, and I know I mention this each show, really, but the fact that I put these in chronologically, I never thought of it at the time. The reason I got the, I think you're talking about 80 articles total made up the four-volume set, but they weren't in a chronological order. But, of course, as the Synagogue of Satan is chronological, I resorted these chronologically. And it's only been since I've been doing these shows with BB and Golden. For example, the extract I've got from the next one starts off talking about the Kehillah again. And so you can see the sort of linkage between the narrative of the previous issue and the following issue. So I hope that you're getting that from...
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
This show. So the next one is called The Jewish Demand for Rights in America, and it's the Dearborn Independent issue of March the 5th, 1921. I've got just over a page on this one. A careful examination of the intensive propaganda conducted by the Kehillah and the American Jewish Committee will not only reveal that the whole United States is considered to be the legitimate field for Jewish interference, but also that a very wide diversity of rights is insisted upon by them. Heads of Kehillah labor unions in New York demand that the Jews in Europe be exempted from the operation of whatever American immigration law may be passed. The Kehillah, in its reports, describes its efforts to obtain special recognition of Jewish holidays, in some cases going so far as to demand the continuance of pay to public employees who absent themselves at Yom Kippur, at the same time opposing the continuance of pay to Catholic public employees who desired to observe the chief Lenten days. Kehillah records show that the Jews of Oklahoma addressed a petition to the convention which formulated the first state constitution, protesting that the acknowledgement of Christ in the instrument would be repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. Cahilla compelled the Council of University Settlement in New York City to adopt a resolution that, in holiday celebrations held annually by the Kindergarten Association, Christmas trees, a Christmas program for celebration, and the singing of Christmas songs be eliminated. Cahilla records show that the Jews petitioned the Chicago School Board, demanding that sectarian teachings in public schools and the singing of Christian hymns be discontinued. Also, that at the demand of a Jewish rabbi, three public school principals were compelled to omit all Christmas celebrations and the use of the Christmas tree in public schools. Leaders of New York Jewry succeed in having Police Commissioner Bingham removed from office by the mayor because of his criticism of criminality among Russian-Polish Jews of New York City. At the present time, a cleaning of public library shelves is proceeding in a number of cities to prevent the public securing books which public money has bought, the objection to the books being that they discuss Jews as they are. All books in praise of Jews are spared. It is a common practice in New York for the Jews to force themselves into juries which try Jewish cases. Jewish law students, with which the city swarms, work their way through college, partly or wholly by jury duty. Another Jewish right is that the Associated Press shall print what the Jews want printed and in exactly the tone the Jews desire. So that's what I've got on that one. Golden, do you want to start us off on that? Over to you.
Sure, it pretty well explains exactly how they work in their kahillas. Their work as a Jewish interest is number one. Everyone else has to bend to it. And they're trying to teach all the other groups to work as individuals, so not as a group, because a group is racist. So if you work as an individual, then you can't form a group to fight them. What we had before was Christianity as a technically a goy kahilla, where it was fighting it, but that got broken by the Civil Rights Act. And they moved on now to displacing whites. White were an actual group for a bit there, where they did work as a group. But they were taught through neoliberalism individualism. So now you're all a bunch of individuals, a bunch of pigs, and you're not allowed to form a group. You're trying to fight this war as an individual against a group with different hives that is working in lockstep with each other. And that's what people have to understand. And the hypocrisy is a flex. I can actually do this. I can steal out of your pocket. There's nothing you can do about it. You can point out the hypocrisy all you want. It doesn't matter. I have the power. And that's a key thing, is people just still can't accept it. They're trying to play into the morality that they've been taught about through Christianity to be moral. Meanwhile, they're being cheated about it. It's actually a fascinating chapter. It's that famous line of... I demand special rights over you because my group is special, because I'm the biggest victim. Meanwhile, they have all the power. It's like an inversion. They're guilt-tripping you. But again, every other group that they support has to have moral rights above you, not equality, equity, above you. And this way, they rule over top of you. And you'll actually hand it over because they'll guilt-trip you. Back over to you.
Thank you, Golden. And BB, what are your thoughts?
Oh, did BB bugger off?
No, BB. I'm sorry.
I muted out so I wouldn't be making noise. What I find amazing about this, so we're in March 1921, in the lead up to Easter 1921, and what he is describing is exactly what I'm seeing happen here in the Appalachian Mountains in the middle of the Bible Belt in the little sleepy Mayberry town of Boone, North Kakalaki, where after 9/11, we basically got invaded by a Marxist cell that, you know, they're coming in to fix us, that they are under this banner of Tikkun Olam. They're here to fix the world. And the problem with that is, all we white Christian people that live in this, that we go back to colonial times, we are the ones that need to be, you know, eradicated and a replacement population brought in, all under Jewish control. And one of the first things I noticed when I went to the public library for the first time after coming back to my mountains, and the library, you know, the one of the librarians was this New York Jewish woman with a proud, you know, Hebrew Kabbalah ring on her little Kabbalah bracelet. And one of the things she was doing was basically going through the shelves and purging anything and everything that the Jews didn't like. It was like, you know, going through a hit list, and everybody was afraid to say anything to this person, right? And at the same time, just ordering in all of this trash literature, you know, penny dreadfuls for teens and children, you know, about, you know, diversity and LGBTQ and, you know, civil rights, blah, 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 and pumping that, and of course putting in an entire Holocaust section, right? And that's the level of power that they have at, you know, the public library system. And, you know, basically monitoring, it's like having a little CNN, you know, it's like if you check out anything questionable, you know, you're on her radar, and she's going to report back to the New Temple about, you know, oh, we've got a problem Gentile, potential problem here. We need to do some research. And so basically you've got a spy operation going on where they're going through and doing a risk analysis of the population of, you know, who can be bullied, who can be bribed, who needs to be blackmailed, who do we just need to run out of town or, you know, just completely disgrace, and who do we need to kill? I mean, this is how these people operate. It is not a gentle system. It is an intransigent system. And so this idea of, you know, always looking for something to complain about, finding fault in everything, that's one of the key parts of Marxist critical theory. You go into a peaceful, cooperative, working system, and you start creating problems where none exist. And if anybody pushes back, then you call your local support squad, and suddenly you've got scandal. You've got the Jewish media covering it. You've got all the political leaders making apologies, etc. And it's this idea of, we are offended, you either acquiesce, bow down to us, or we will destroy you because we are the victim group and we're offended. And so this is what we're up against. This is black magic. This is spell casting. This is psychological warfare. And they have been doing it for a very, very long time. And like Golden was saying, it's all these networks, and they call that the Jewish function. You model this as cells, that you have spheres of influence in these cells that just keep growing and growing in power. And they're all networked together in control of everything. And now they brag about it as the international Jewish function. And the only thing that's standing against, you know, world peace is those evil white people and those evil white nations and that evil Christianity that is against their law. It is, you know, that is a, you know, idolatry. You know, Christianity, it violates the Noahide laws, and so they are out to destroy it. And so just reading this section of how these groups are organized, I'm like, yes, after, you know, 20 years of research here, after 9/11, of what has happened to my hometown, my home state, and my home country, it's like, yes, he was nailing this 100 years ago. Why was I not taught this in public school? Why was I not taught this in college or university? Why was I not taught this in Sunday school classes? So, you know, this is important. You know, why do they always, you know, say Henry Ford is an anti-Semite, you shouldn't listen to him? Because he was, you know, nailing it back then 100 years ago. And unfortunately, like Nesta Webster, you know, she was nailing it in the UK, but they got drowned out by this same system that, you know, they took them out by these methods that they were describing. So back to you.
Oh, sorry about that. Struggling to get to the mute button, bringing the mixer up. So no, that's very interesting, and I'm pleased you mentioned Nesta Webster as well. I've never done made enough references to her. I did read several of her works, and it's people like that, that really got the ball rolling for us. Of course, Henry Ford in the US and Nesta Webster in the UK, and it's been this kind of, most of this pushback has come from the US, especially today. I mentioned this on another show, that the majority of the sort of truth seeker community, the majority of this audience, are in the US, and I'd say the next largest is probably in the UK. I think it has something to do with the English language being the most sort of world language, although I do have, you know, guests on from other countries as well who speak very good English. But I think it also shows why the US and the UK have been attacked so much by this system, because they're very unhappy that we just won't, let them just take us over. And they're very unhappy that there are little pockets like the three of us, the holdouts, if you like, that are trying to broadcast this message. These are words that Henry Ford wrote. He was extremely confident in publishing them. They didn't come after him for any sort of libel or anything like that. Yet there's no interest amongst the authorities in the UK or the US about these. They're more interested in what BB or I are up to, even though we're just trying to get a message out from probably arguably the most famous industrialist the world has ever known. So let's move on to the next one. This is, again, talking about Jewish rights. It's entitled Jewish Rights Clash with American Rights, the Dearborn Independent issue of March 12th, 1921. And this is what I've got. It is well that the public should understand that the present study of the Jewish question in the United States is not based upon religious differences. The religious element does not enter except when it is injected by the Jews themselves, and it is injected in three ways. First, in their allegation that any study of the Jews is religious persecution. Second, by their own records of what their activities in the United States consist of. Third, by the impression, which is very misleading if not corrected, that the Jews are the Old Testament people of the Old Testament religion, which is so highly regarded in the Christian world. The Jews are not the Old Testament people, and the Old Testament, their Bible, can be found among them only with difficulty. They are a Talmudical people who have preferred the volumes of rabbinical speculation to the words of their ancient prophets. The Jews' interference with the religion of others and the Jews' determination to wipe out of public life every sign of the predominant Christian character of the United States is the only active form of religious intolerance in the country today. The New York Kehillah, through its Bureau of Education, is giving a purely religious training to 200,000 Jewish children. The religious training being, of course, not what is generally understood by that term, but a training in ideas of racial superiority and separateness. It is worth remembering that every demand voiced in Washington before officials and committees, that every high personage that appears there on Jewish matters, the Louis Marshalls and the Wises, the Goldfogels, the Rosalskis, besides many others like the Kahns and the Schiffs, who keep out of the committee limelight and away from the protesting parties, are all linked up to this Jewish interest or that, with the main interest which is based on the Kehillah and expresses itself through District 12 of the American Jewish Committee. So, BB, do you want to start us off? Any comments on this one?
That he nails it once again, that the only persons talking about persecution are the Jews. That if you look at what they're doing, they consider that persecution. And this is a trick. It's like, you know, the whole thing of the Israelis using anti-Semite or Holocaust denier. This is a trick. The second you start looking at what we're doing, we're going to scream victimhood and then point the finger at you. And then you have to prove that you're not oppressing us, that you're not persecuting the Jews before the masses. And so this is this section of the series in 1921, like I said, leading up through Easter in 1921. First, he talks about how these cells are set up, all these hidden hand power systems, that are manipulating these countries, these nations behind the scenes. And then he moves through how they use the masses and the mass manipulation. One of the things Freud wrote so much about was the mass, the mob, the mindset of the mob as an entity, and how to control that became a core part of the cultural Marxist theory of creating these synthetic rent-a-mobs and going out and just terrorizing everything until they get their way. And then suddenly the mobs disappear. And we've seen this over the past several years here in the United States with George Soros-funded Black Lives Matter, Antifa, LGBTQ riots, etc., where they go in and you've got all these paid professional agitators along with the useful idiot volunteers. And they're all under the control of these Jewish groups, whether they realize it or not. And it's about how to use the people against the existing power systems, how to tear it down by summoning an army. You think the magician summoning things, I can summon soldiers, I can make them bend to my will, and that's what the mob is. So you have all these very highly trained Marxist psychological warfare experts going out and getting all these NGO groups and do-gooder groups and mobilizing them as an act of terrorism that, until we get our way, we're going to continue to destroy things, and we will continue destroying things until we do get our way. And if you try to push back on us, then we're just going to claim even more victimhood, and that will bring more mobs to our cause. And so this is that Kafka trap that leadership in these nations are up against. It's between a rock and a hard place. It's like you're in this paradox of a no-win situation as long as you're playing by their game rules. And so you have to pull yourself out to see the dynamics that Henry Ford is explaining here, so you can remove yourself from it and say, I'm not going to play that game. I'm going to play a different game at a higher level to expose this. And this is what Henry Ford was doing. This is what we're doing. We're playing a game at a higher level to expose this so that it loses its power. And that's the thing about the hidden hand. It's very powerful in the dark, in the shadows. But once you expose it to the light, it's like mushrooms in the sunshine. It just evaporates. That power evaporates. And once they have lost the benefit of the doubt, then the game's over. Nobody listens to the dark magician anymore, right? That's when they get run out of town. And why did they get thrown out hundreds and hundreds of times over the last 2,000 years? Is at some point, goodness does prevail. They are exposed, and everybody says, you just need to leave or we will kill you for what you're doing. And then, of course, they go to the next host and play the victim of, and like the old saying is, they always tell you what happened to them, but they never tell you why. And this is the thing of the diaspora. They just move from host nation to host nation to host nation and then hook up with the network and just pick up operations as usual. It's like a corporate franchise where they just move into an area like McDonald's moving in and taking over. And so this is the whole time they're playing the victim that, the great experiment was a Christian experiment. And, we are obviously at a disadvantage. So we need more rights in America if we're going to live here. And so it's at the one hand, they say this is ours. And on the other hand, they're saying, we're a protected class because we're persecuted because this nation was set up by a different set of game rules than our law. So therefore, we have to have special privileges and special rights to exist in this persecution environment. So back to you.
Thank you, BB. And Golden, anything you'd like to add?
Sure. If we think about this, it is about playing the victimhood card, but it actually is persecuting us. It's anti-Goy and anti-Gentilism. but it's using Christianity because Christianity is the biggest group. It's like their group against your group. They want you to break into individual units. Then you have no power. And back then, Christianity was the biggest power. Like, for instance, now they've moved on. Like, liberalism has moved on. There's now no rights for the individual or the for the white people. It now is to destroy the system itself. And, for instance, what they're doing about throwing documents, removing religious preference in ads to back then, now they're rewriting Wikipedia. And they're now framing it as what they believe as a truth compared to what actually happened. So they're actually rewriting history. It's the same thing they did back then. They want to get rid of your social structure that holds you together as a group. So you all now become atoms. And then as atoms, you can't work as a cohesive group against their small cells that they slowly put in different places to keep spreading the virus. It's like a virus, guys. And for instance, they wanted back then, they wanted Christianity removed from ideal officers in police manuals. Things like that. The crosses that were on the buildings for Christmas. They wanted anything that held you as a group together as a goy, they wanted removed. And they just played constantly the victim. And that's the key thing. They're teaching other groups nowadays, today, exactly the same thing. They're not quite as smart, but it's to break apart your society. So every group now you're going to see is always playing a victim. They never apologize. And they keep hitting and hitting and hitting and chipping away until you cave. Aren't you a good Christian? Shouldn't you just cave? Cave this time. Just put it down this time. We can move on. We can move on. It's like the same thing we all do when people enter your area and all of a sudden your real estate prices drop and your schools go to crap. What do you got? You got to fight back. We all move. And that's a problem. I think there's something inherently a little bit different with us where we just don't seem to want to fight back. And I think that's the key thing. They don't want you fighting back, so they're trying to break any group that actually holds up some type of morality towards them. Back to you.
Thank you, Golden. And I think we've got time. We can always overrun by a few minutes if necessary. Let's put the next one in. Again, Jewish rights, folks. The title is Jewish Rights to Put Studies Out of Schools. Dearborn Independent, issue of March 19th, 1921. Got about a page here. Here we go. The organisations of Jewry are numerous and widespread, all of them being international in tone, whether so chartered or not. The Alliance Israelite Universelle is perhaps the world clearinghouse of Jewish policy, with which every national aggregation of Jewish societies has affiliation. The Independent Order of B'nai B'rith, which is now hopeful of reaching the 1 million membership mark, is frankly international. It has divided the world into 11 districts, seven of which are in the United States. Its lodges at last report numbered 426. The four members of its executive committee who do not reside in the United States reside in Berlin, Vienna, Bucharest and Constantinople, respectively. Its lodges have been set up in the United States, Europe, Asia, and Africa. Everything centres at last, apparently, in the American Jewish Committee and the Executive Committee of the New York Kehillah. Judge Mack, Judge Brandeis, the Warburgs, the Schiffs, Morgenthau, Wolf, Krauss, Elkus, Strauss, Louis Marshall, these names appear over and over again.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. Owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN.